This interview and the entire Real Men Connect podcast is brought to you by Ministry Men of Influence, the first ever men's only Christian mastermind group for aspiring speakers, writers, podcasters, coaches, and course creators. So if you're looking to turn your God-given passion into a full-time profession, but you need help and don't know where to start, just go to ministrymen.org for details. That's ministrymen.org.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. Each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. Today we have with us Alan Beck, who is a musician, pastor, businessman, husband, and father. He's wearing a lot of hats. And Alan has been married to his high school sweetheart, Cindy, for nearly 30 years. And they have four children ranging in age from 12 to 26. Alan has served as a worship pastor for many years while also running a successful technologies business in North Carolina. And he speaks and writes on biblical topics for spiritual growth, leadership, business, and other topics. Alan also has a heart for one-on-one discipleship and mentoring for men. His desire to take his years of experience in many areas and be helpful to believers everywhere and anywhere that he possibly can. Now, I met Alan through a mutual friend of ours and past guest, Kevin Bullard, who suggested I reach out to Alan. And after discussing his background in business and ministry, I wanted to invite Alan on the show to talk about something we'd never really discussed on the Real Men Connect podcast. And that's when you're stuck between a job and the ministry. Now, specifically speaking, there are many men we know who would like to be active in ministry or at least be able to give more time to the ministry. But because of their full-time jobs, they lack the time and resources to do it. And even if they had the time, most churches can't afford to compensate them for the time required to commit to the ministry. Somehow, Alan was able to do that successfully in his role as a worship pastor at his church. He's been able to, what he calls, pay his own way. And I wanted to have Alan on the show today to discuss how he was able to do that. So with that being said, I want to welcome Alan Beck to the Real Men Connect podcast. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Hey, Joe. Thanks so much for having me on today.
And Alan, this is a very unique topic because we've had guests on the show talk about pursuing their entrepreneurial dreams, you know, and the calling that God's had on their life. We had a guy, a friend of mine, who came on about how he was called to the ministry to be a pastor and how he did that. But this topic is a little bit more unique in the fact that we're not talking about people who want to leave their job to go into the ministry, but they desire to do more in the ministry, but because of their jobs or other outside interests that they have a hard time doing it or having the resources to be able to do it effectively. And when I say their lack of resources, I'm talking about the church's lack of resources to compensate them for it. And Alan, I have no idea how this discussion is going to go. I know what I would like to accomplish with it, but I don't know in the direction it's going to go when it comes to what you're going to share. But you have a very, very unique perspective, and I can't wait to share it with our audience. But before we get started, Alan, I always ask our guests to share with us their favorite Bible verse that gives them inspiration from the Word of God. And so, Alan, what's your favorite Bible verse? I know that's a hard question to ask. It's like asking what's your favorite child.
Right.
But what's your favorite Bible verse?
Right. Well, one that I've returned to and have for many years is 2 Corinthians 2:14, thanks be to God who always causes us to triumph in Christ and makes manifest the fragrance of Christ through us in every place.
Now, why does that inspire you so much? Because that's a very unique Bible reference that I haven't heard anybody give that one. Why that one?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it has some specific applications to what we're talking about today, because I have... I do a lot of things. I own a business and I've been in ministry for many years. I work as a professional musician. I have four kids and an active, most of them aren't kids anymore, but an active family life. wonderful marriage, and I think that I find myself running in so many different circles that the idea of God spreading the fragrance of Christ in every place resonates with me. So, you know, I find myself in the theater community because I play in pit orchestras for musicals, or just the music community because I'm doing jazz events, or in business, certainly with clients, and obviously in ministry and in direct ministry, those kinds of things that we do. And so that notion of the fragrance of Christ spreading in every place resonates with me.
Now, Alan, before we get into how men who want and have a desire to be more active in ministry and maybe even pursue it full time, I want you to take us back for giving us your story on how you became a worship pastor.
Sure.
For your church. And then we'll get into how I can't wait to have you explain to us this pay your own way concept. But tell us, how did you get to becoming a worship pastor?
Well, I was not brought up in church or to know God. My dad was a seeker, really, and I never knew growing up for a number of years, you know, what his current sort of philosophy was going to be. But what he was doing was he was searching, and he did eventually become a Christian. I did not at the same time. But after 1 year of college, a friend of mine from high school had a remarkable experience with Jesus Christ, and during a summer between college, between school years, he began talking to me about the Lord, and the short story is that he led me to the Lord. Well, I was a music student. That's what my training is, my background is. I grew up in a musician's home, and so one of the things I immediately began doing, he played piano, I was a guitar player, and so I immediately began just helping him and playing in worship services and worship bands. And it didn't take too long before, because I'm sort of wired, Joe, to, you know, if there's a steering wheel, I'm going to grab it and drive. That's just sort of how I'm wired. And so it didn't take too long before I was leading, and then it just grew from there. And I spent a number of years at one much smaller church as a worship leader and as an associate pastor. And there's other things that I did with that church. It's part of the story. And then the last 9 years, I was a worship pastor at a larger church with a much larger, you know, musical team and production team and, you know, things like that. And so that's been the last 29, 30 years of doing that along with other things.
Going in ministry came before your business. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. I was I worked for a music company for a number of years while I was so really I've done this both from the standpoint of working for someone else and wanting to minister effectively as much as I can, and then also being in business for myself, which has been the last 17 years, and doing more ministry. And that, I would say that that last 17 years is the more exemplary time in terms of how you pay your own way and how you develop your business and how you balance ministry and things like that.
You know, so we're going to jump right into it then, because I want you to explain this concept of pay your own way.
Yep.
And how did that develop? Because you've coined that phrase. And I think that a lot of men out there who desire to be in ministry need to understand this concept that you come up with. And I know there's no foolproof formula or plan, but the thing is, you did follow a process and it's worked out very successfully for you. And this is one of those things I say, why reinvent the wheel? And if we can learn from your journey, maybe the man out there who desires to be in ministry could say, you know what, I could try some of those things that Alan's talking about. But I want you to just break it down in simple terms. So what do you mean? Where did this concept pay your own way came from for you?
Well, the concept in that, how the way that it gelled and became something that I had a real hold on really played out in this last 9 year assignment as a worship pastor at a larger church, and larger than I was in before. And we had left our previous church, and we were I meant to take about a year off and sort of be anonymous and find a place to settle in and then figure out where to go next. Well, we ended up visiting this church that I served in, and it was no time at all. The pastor there knew who I was, and I didn't know that their worship leader was leaving at the time. And so he said, "Hey, let's have lunch," and we did. And you know, in that case, I knew I needed to be refreshed. I thought I needed to be refreshed at that time by just resting. It turned out I really needed to be refreshed in that case by serving in a new and fresher environment. And so I became the worship leader there in pretty short order. And we had a great program. I loved it all the way from the beginning to the end. And when we left, and we'll talk about that later, but it was just because the Lord was leading us, not because we didn't like it anymore or anything had gone wrong. We loved it all the way to the end. And my wife was the children's director there, a very vibrant, great children's ministry. But the not too far into it, the pastor there was, I think he was concerned because I was doing, we had a high-level music ministry, and I was not being paid. I think he was a little bit concerned about it, and he had other people coming in. And so I sat down and talked to him one day, because I had four kids. They all needed to be educated and fed and, you know, all of those things. We've got two that we've already put through college, and the third one is in college now. And I just sat down and I said, "Listen, you know, there's no possible way that you can pay me enough for what I need for my family." But by then, I had gotten my business going, and we can talk about that a little bit more. And I just told him, "Look, I have flexibility because of my business. I work hard, but I have flexibility. So why don't you just let me pay my way and just let me serve? It's in my heart to serve." And so that was our agreement at that time. And that's where the phrase came from.
Now, so basically you kind of lifted the burden off the pastor, because he probably thought, I can imagine, he probably thought he's going to lose you because if you decided to quit and it's at this high level, he's thinking, "Man, how are we going to replace that?"
Right.
And so you kind of lifted that burden off him by letting him know that, "Hey, I know you can't pay me, but I can earn income in another way that you don't have to worry about it, and I'll take that from your hands." So that's what you mean by pay your own way.
That is.
So now let's make this more practical then for the guys out there who are listening and say, "Okay, yeah, I would love to be the youth leader at our church, or the men's ministry leader at our church, or the worship leader at our church. But Alan, I don't have that kind of flexibility that you had of running your own business and being able to set your own hours." Because that's the obstacle I tend to hear from guys, is that, "Joe, I'm working 50 to 60 hours a week, man."
That's right.
"And yet God is telling me I need to be serving in the church." So what does that guy do who has less flexibility than you have?
Right. Well, I think there's just an important concept that anyone who is working in ministry and working any job, and it was true for me also, even in my own business, and that is that you have to take on ministry as you can. It becomes daunting if you just think in the large sense, "I just want to be in ministry. I want to be more involved in ministry." And you don't have any real definition in terms of what that looks like or what it can look like, at least today or for now. And so you have to define, you have to quantify, how much time can I put into this? Exactly what responsibilities can I realistically take on? Because the other side of this is that if you just on an open-ended basis take on ministry, you're going to end up burning out because you haven't defined what your parameters are. I think one of the benefits of the way that I served over those 9 years was, also because I was not being paid, I was able to define what my parameters were. It's not that I wanted to be in control of the church or the pastor or anything. I just needed to be able to define what I could do. Well, I mean, in reality, I was able to do a lot. But whatever that level is, wherever you are, however much you're working, whatever ministry you want to be involved in, you've got to step back and just look at it and figure out, what can I commit to? And be realistic about it and do that. Make sure that you define it. It's just like when Jesus said, you know, if a man starts to build a tower and he doesn't sit down and add it up, then if he gets it halfway built and can't finish it, then men will say, well, what are you doing? Well, you've just got to count the cost and understand, too, that being involved with ministry, it's not, well, either I'm going to minister or serve as much as a senior pastor does, or I'm not going to serve at all. It's not all or nothing. You got to find where you can make, if you will define those things, you may find that you can do more than you think you can. But it seemed so daunting when you had no parameters on it that you didn't even venture into what you really could accomplish.
And that makes sense too, Alan. But let me ask you this then. How do you define those parameters? Because it's one thing to say, okay, we need to set parameters or boundaries or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
And that makes perfect sense. But for that man who doesn't know where to start, I guess a better question would be, how did you set your parameters? What became your criteria, I guess,
yeah,
for what you would be able to do, you couldn't do, how much time you commit? How'd you come up with that for yourself? And I know it's going to be different for each man out there, but give us a start on how you did it.
Well, for me, the obvious place that I was going to serve was in music ministry.
Right.
And so immediately I knew that that's what I was going to do. I also knew that because of the way that I was wired, I knew if they were asking me to take that department, that I was going to take it. But there were even parameters in that. There were things that I could do and I couldn't do. For instance, a guy in my position can only do so many major events for a church. I was doing the week in and week out worship, and we were doing that on a high level, and we had some major events. We did a fantastic Christmas program every year, but there were, I knew that there were some limitations on what I would be able to do. You can only do so many major events, and so I've limited those things and said, well, here's what I can do, and put my time into those things, because it's so important to take on what you can do and do that really well. You don't want to dilute your effectiveness in one area by taking on too much so that the whole body of work suffers. You can't do any of it well because you're doing too much of it. And even in my position, I had a lot of flexibility, and we did that on a very high level, but I had limitations. And I would say that if you have someone who's, maybe it's not as obvious what they would be doing as it is for me, but if you want to be serving in a church, well, then find out from the leadership, what are the things that they need? Tell them, communication is so important. Tell them, I really want to be involved. Find out what their need is, and then clearly evaluate and communicate, well, here's what I can do. Then I can take it. I can do this much for you, and I would like to do that much for you. And start doing that, and then see where it grows.
Now, Alan, and that's great advice. And you're right. You have to keep those communication lines on. Because I was going to ask you about, do you get with the pastor to determine this, or whoever the person in charge is? And I guess I'm getting this picture. Is it like you're negotiating a little bit and say, okay, this is what you need. This is what I can do. I can do this, but I can't do that. You definitely would advise that you have to kind of come to a collaborative agreement.
You should.
On what you can and cannot do.
You should. And, I guess negotiate is a reasonable word, but I think that I think behind all of this is you are making clear that you have a heart to serve. In other words, you've not gone into the leadership to say, hey, I'm here, but here's my ultimatum. It's, or I just want to negotiate in a business standpoint. It's just that you need to have good communication. And hopefully you're making clear that you have a heart to serve. I can tell you, too. So I also filled the pulpit and did other things at times at our church. But there were some things that the pastor wanted to do, that the church wanted to do, in terms of more teaching ministry. And I love teaching ministry. I'm really working more in that direction now that I've left that post. But I did have to say, I cannot take on, for instance, a weekly a weekly teaching session in addition to what I'm doing, because it's just not, that's not going to be reasonable, you know, for me with my time. And he understood that. It's just a matter of, I think maybe I would steer away from the word negotiation, because it's, right. it sounds too businesslike and
it's secular.
Yeah, it really does. And, it, you know, really know that the thing is that my heart always was to serve, but I wanted to do whatever I was doing well. And so I had to communicate clearly what I could and couldn't do.
You know, and I want to kind of summarize, and if I'm leaving something out, Alan, make sure you jump in here, because basically saying, so the key points, if we're going to set these parameters, you say you have to define your parameters and know exactly what you can and cannot do. So you want to touch on time commitment.
Yep.
Responsibilities.
Yep.
As well as availability.
That's right.
Of when you're available. Now, am I leaving something out? Or is there something more you would add in there that has to be a point of discussion and communicating with the leadership?
Well, it's worth contemplating how much time you will need to spend at home, you know, preparing for whatever it is.
Okay.
It's worth contemplating those things. And you have to have conversations with your spouse. This enters into marriage as well, because you have to have conversations with your spouse about what that time commitment will be and whether they're on board for that. Like I told you, my wife was also the children's director during that time. And in fact, we were paying her own way for most of the time also. And she did that children's ministry on a high level, but there's more to that. But you have to make sure that you communicate with your spouse and with your family about those commitments too, because the last thing you want to develop, and again, this if you just make the parameters and communicate well, you can avoid this, but the last thing you want to develop is some sort of animosity or resentment toward the church or ministry in general, because you're putting a lot of time in or you seem to be being presumed upon by the leadership. And maybe they don't mean to presume upon you, but you have not communicated well. Neither of you has communicated well about what you can and can't do. And you have to remember in all of that, I'm a busy guy. I do a lot of things, Joe, but my family is first and my wife is first before that. And we spend quality time together and have for 30 years. And we have a great marriage and have been able to hold that, because even with all this going on, that has stayed first.
And Alan, you bring up a great point. It definitely, we have to include our wives in the process.
Yep.
Because this is going to impact, it is going to impact the family. But you brought up something, I mean, it totally went over my head. And I've been in a ministry leadership position at my church. And now I'm doing full-time ministry outside of my church.
Yep.
But I never considered what you just brought up about the preparation time. Because, you know, we just think about what you're doing in the church.
Yeah.
But we're not looking at the time it takes you to prepare for what you're going to do in the church outside of the church.
That's right.
And I'm getting these pictures, these mental pictures of that person who is, if they have to preach a sermon, you know, you don't just show up and just preach a sermon. You have to study. You have to research, that type of thing. I know even doing men's ministry myself, and I do it outside of the church. We meet again. We're meeting this Saturday. I have to prepare for that.
Exactly.
Now, but here's my question, because you just brought out something that I just totally overlooked, and I can see how people can get in trouble if that's not taken into account. So you're saying take that into account, talk to the leadership about that. This is part of the parameters: time commitment, responsibilities, availability, preparation. But typically, and I'm going to go there, is that a lot of times when you're talking to leadership, they seem to, and I'm not saying all, but I'm kind of generalizing here, but they tend to underestimate
the time
commitment that's involved.
Right.
And, oh, you know, because it come across this way, Alan, oh, yeah, I understand. It's not going to take that much time. It's not going to take too much time from you and from your family. And all it's going to take is 2 hours a week or 10 hours a week. And then you find out that it takes probably double that.
Right. Yeah.
How do you address that with the leadership when you guys sit down, you discuss the parameters, and you don't know because you haven't done the position yet, and then you find out that it's more time committed than you expected.
Right.
How should you respond to the leadership when it comes to that?
Well, let me address that in a couple ways, because you brought up something that's important about church leadership, and that is that they do tend to underestimate the commitment that goes into various things. Music ministry and children's ministry are both very, if you're leading them, are very commitment heavy in terms of what happens outside of church. And now I don't know any pastors who would be malicious in this at all, but they tend to think, especially if they get a hold of somebody that's talented or, you know, that really has some abilities, well, what they're thinking about is propelling the church forward, and how can they, you know, how can they leverage this into something that is really kingdom centric. And so their motivation in that is good, but especially if they are vocational ministers, a lot of times the longer they are away from what we'll call secular work, the more out of touch with what real life for people tends to look like, you know, in terms of balancing that kind of work if they want to be involved with ministry. And so there can be a real communication gap, you know, between the leadership and the volunteer who is serving on a significant level. So in the first place, I would say, as you're taking things on, take it on in small bites. Don't take on a large thing to begin with. One of the things that we used to say in our music ministry, and we had several kind of recurring phrases that helped keep us on track of where we're going. One of our phrases was, "We'll be here next week." What that means to us is everything doesn't have to get done today. We got all kinds of ideas. There are places that we want to go. We don't need to just, you know, hit the fire alarm and think that it all has to be done today. Let's take this in small bites. We're going to be here next week, and we'll be here the week after that, and we'll be here the week after that. So I would say take it in small bites so that you can evaluate what your time commitment is instead of taking something that is too large and having to back off. And then as you see what that time commitment is, meet and have communication with your leaders and explain to them, here is the amount of time that this is taking, and maybe if there's more that you can take on. At that point, when you have a handle on it, you can say, I think I can do some more. Here's how much more time I can do. Or you can explain to them why it is that you can't do more, because in fact it takes, you know, this amount of time. I can tell you there's very few pastors, unless they've been in music ministry, that have any idea what it takes to pull off
right.
what you're doing
right.
every week. They see that and they love that end product, and they assume, they know that you're a talented person, and so they assume that it comes naturally to you. They don't have any idea what actually goes into that, and it's not reasonable to really demand that they know that either. They're never going to know that. You just have to communicate with them. Let me tell you how many hours I'm really putting in, and here's what I can do.
And Alan, that's great information. And correct me if I'm misquoting or misrepresenting what you're saying, because I'm writing down notes here as you're talking, that you're saying basically, and I think it's a great idea, just start small. Don't take on all of it.
Yeah. So yeah.
You start with small steps. I'll put down here, start small with small steps, but meet frequently in the beginning. And so would you agree and advise that at least for, I don't know whatever that time period will be, but I would assume at least for the first few months to schedule a regular meeting with the leadership to kind of give them a barometer of what's going on and what you're seeing, and if it's lining up with what you anticipated and what they expected and that kind of thing. So would you advise that?
Yes, absolutely, I would. And you know, church leaders, they come in all stripes, and some of them are very forward in terms of initiating communication with the people that they're working with. Others are not particularly, they don't take that initiative a lot. And so you have to not be afraid to take that initiative and ask for that time. You have to be respectful of their time. Probably can't take 2 hours a week from them. But you know, you'd be amazed at what you can achieve if you go in with what it is you need to communicate about and what you can achieve in 15 minutes, just to make sure that you're both on the same page. It'll keep you from burning out. It can save your marriage. It can save your family, because, you know, doing substantive ministry and keeping your career going is a balancing act. and it's not, you want to be able to be in it for the long haul and not burn out and not ruin your family over it either.
And Alan, we hear it so often, and I'm sure you do too, of all the people who want to give their time and then they say, I couldn't do it because it was burning me out. And God never meant for us to serve him and get burned out by it. You know, I can't recall reading anything about Jesus saying, boy, I'm just so burned out
right
from this ministry. And I can't imagine a person who had more on his hands and responsibility than Jesus had. But what I'm hearing from you also, we don't typically use this word a lot in ministry, but you're saying we really need to be proactive and not reactive when it comes to serving in ministry.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Because we do tend to be reactionary when it comes to that. And then we find out, I took on too much. It's more than I could handle. This is good. This is good information. Now, let me ask you this, because you're a business person. You're a businessman. Now, do you have employees working for you?
I do. Mm-hmm. I have nine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You got nine employees working for you. I'm going to flip the script, so to speak, on you and have you help this man out who's an employee.
Sure.
And I've run into men like this before where they based on their job and what they're asked to do, it could be that they're working on Sundays and they can't get off on Sundays, or it could be that they have to put in overtime all the time, not by choice, but is mandated that they have to put in more than 40 hours a week. So they're putting in 50 to 60 hours a week. Now, that person tends to get really discouraged, thinking, you know what, I just can't.
Right.
You know, be in ministry. But yet I feel God is calling me to work with the youth. I want to do this, but and I feel like God is asking me and calling me to be an usher at the church. But because of this schedule, it's literally impossible. And typically what we hear men stand up. I've seen this in church a lot, that somebody will stand up in church. Church, will y'all pray for me that God gives me grace in my schedule to do this? And basically waiting for, quote, a miracle to happen.
Yeah.
Is that the only way they could serve?
I got you.
As in ministry, wait for a miracle. Is there something practical they can do to say, God, you've given me enough wisdom to say I can do this to be able to serve you in church?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a kind of a two-prong approach here to this too, because in the first place, I think it's important that we not underestimate the power of prayer. If the Lord is asking you to do something and you can't see your way clear to do it, then you have a mandate to pray. So, and when he gives you something, if he is tugging on your heart to do something, then he means to clear the path and open the doors for you also. And it may seem impossible right now. And so you should, number one, go to prayer, real prayer. Let me suggest this to you. The reason I say real prayer is because the other side to this is, you cannot make the idea that you mentioned the man standing up in prayer and saying in church and saying, pray for me that my schedule, you know, ease up. You can't make the idea that you've asked some people to pray about it an excuse then not to do anything practical either.
Right. Right. That's what I'm saying.
You see,
exactly.
So when I say real prayer, I mean, you're really praying. And the second prong is we're going to put some feet to it. So yeah, you know, everybody finds themselves in different situations, and I'm not sure what your opportunities for ministry may be where you are, but find them. Just find, where can you serve? Where can you be a blessing? Can you have a small group? Is that too much? Can you usher? Can you help? Maybe you want to be in children's ministry and you work every Sunday. What can you do to help the children's department get things prepared for Sunday? You know, the way you put feet to it is to find what can you do, even if it is small. But those small beginnings, remember, we'll be here next week. It's amazing if we are praying and we are putting feet to it as we can, how things can change over time. It takes some patience. And I in my outline I sent to you, I think I wrote some about patience. It's true in business. It's true in developing ministry. There's practical things that you can do. And there's practical things that you need to know, too, if you intend to take more of the path that I'm taking and be in business for yourself too, there are important things to know about that and how you do that. But you take it on, you find somewhere and some way that you can serve.
You know, this is good, Alan, because that blessed me hearing you say that, because I always, I often say that we as Christians, we use the phrase waiting on the Lord as sometimes as an excuse for mediocrity and passivity. And you're saying we need to put feet to our prayer, but to our prayers. But I like what you said, instead of focusing on what you can't do, I can't do it because I'm working on Sunday. I can't do it because I'm working 50 to 60 hours a week. I like just the little shift. You said, what can you do?
Right.
But what can you do? And so I've always shared with guys that when, to me, actively, that you should be actively waiting on the Lord, which means that, yes, you're waiting for the Lord to open a door, give you opportunity. But while you're waiting, you should be serving. While you're waiting, you should be supporting others. While you're waiting, you should be sharpening others. You should be doing something while you're waiting for God to open up those doors. And I like how you said that real that real prayer, not just somebody praying for you and say, okay, now my job is done.
Right.
I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you this now, because you've been doing this for a long time. You said you've been in ministry, what, about 30 years?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, now, I want to know from you, as a person who's been in ministry now for over 30 years and looking backwards.
Yeah.
And looking backwards, because obviously, like we said earlier, that there's no concrete formula to this. It's just learning from other people's experience. And in this case, we're learning from your experience.
Yeah,
Alan.
Right.
But I want you to look back when you first got started and you started pursuing this, because you know a lot now than you knew back then. But if you could go back to you back then, what would you tell a younger Alan to do first as he's pursuing this pay-as-you-go?
Yeah, right.
Or pay my own way ministry. What would you tell him to do first?
Well, really, I would have told him all the way back that he needed not make full-time ministry the only ideal. That was what I thought I needed to be doing if I was going to be substantive or effective at all. And, you know, I did actually work for 2 years full-time at another church. And I took that on at the time because I thought it was the ideal. And in fact, I think the leadership there thought that must be the ideal. Well, it proved not to be the ideal. It was not a good 2 years. And I learned from that is not always the ideal. Certainly there are reasons to be in full-time, vocational ministry. But every Christian should want to be involved, I think I would, these things that I'm telling you, Joe, today are things that I'm not sure I knew them, certainly not like I do now, even in my first 20 years of these last 30 years. It's been the last 10 years that I really came to understand, and I got to implement exactly what I'm talking to you about. In that last 9-year assignment, I did it exactly the way that I'm telling you now. But the first 20 years, I was not nearly as effective. I was often frustrated. I did not know the things that I knew and learned to do in these last 9 years.
And I like that. You said that full time is not always the ideal.
Right.
And I don't know if this is, too tough of a question to ask you, but I'm sure based on now looking back at hindsight, and you say you just learned so much in the last few years, how can a person tell if it is ideal to full-time and not full-time? Because I agree with you that a lot of times we just think you got to be all in or you can't do it.
Yeah.
But there's got to be, is there a way to find out if this is it ideal to go full-time? If it's not, and it's not, and not basing it just on do they have the resources to pay you,
right?
Kind of thing. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are some of those? I don't know if you could help us in that area, but is there ways that little things we should be looking for?
Well, telltale signs? Let me tell you things. I'll tell you some telltale signs. Sometimes I think it's maybe better to know the telltale signs for why it's not a good idea than that it is a good idea, because then, let me explain what I mean. I teach men and have for many years to learn how to roll away from the pressure. I learned from a minister years ago, and he had a football analogy because he was a big guy and he was a lineman, which I've never been. But he talked about if you were going to get away from that guy that was staring at you right in front of you, he might outweigh you by 30 pounds and you're probably not going to go through him. You're going to have to roll away from it. And if you are ministry minded, kingdom minded, you want to be, or think you want to be in full time. But as you try to move that way, you find that there's so much anxiety around it. There's so much pressure around it. There are so many practicalities that are very difficult around it. I mean, there could be trial in anything that you're doing when you are in the will of God, but there's added pressure when you're trying to do something, you're beating up against something that is not really the best thing for you. So my example of that was that 2 years that I just went into full-time ministry. I quit the job that I was in. I worked for a music company. God was gracious to me. I have a great story about how we ended up coming out of that and then going into business. But during that 2 year period, in the first place, I was not fulfilled. I was, the tasks that I was doing were not really my makeup. I was not particularly fulfilled. And secondly, Joe, I almost went broke. You know, there are practicalities if you're going to be really effective, because you've got to be able to take care of your family. You've got to be able to, and you want to be able to be generous. You know, all those things come into play. These are things, Joe, that I think it's easy to look at and think, well, that seems very unspiritual, or there's not a lot of faith in that. I don't think so. I think that it's kind of like when Jesus appeared to Paul and he said, hey, Paul, it's hard for you to kick against the pricks or against the goads. Sometimes we are trying to force our way into some level of service that he has not asked us to do. And so those kinds of pressures and practicalities can be flags for you. They're not telling you that you shouldn't serve or you don't have a place in ministry. But they may be things that you need to roll away from because there's too much pressure there that is going to cause problems for your family. And I hope you understand. I know that there's balance in it. When you make a move in the will of God, often there are, you know, it can be a time where there are certain pressures. But you can tell when God is just not working with you on this. You get what I'm saying?
And what you're saying, Alan, you're right on point, and you're not alone in that stance and that position. We had a guest on, Dr. Amos Johnson, who has a ministry called Church for Entrepreneurs. And I asked him a similar question when it came to when God has given you a vision for pursuing entrepreneurship. I said, how do you not know if, you know, that when you're getting outside the will of God, if this is not the route that God wants you to pursue? And he pretty much said exactly what you just said. So you're not crazy.
Yeah, good.
But the way he described it, he says that if you're pursuing something that God really doesn't want you to do, he says God is going to, you know, God's blessing does not come with sorrow. And he says, yes, it's going to come like what you just said, Alan, that it's going to, there's going to be that some resistance. There's going to be some hardships and that kind of thing, but it doesn't come with sorrow. So I asked him, I said, what do you mean by sorrow? He says, Joe, collateral damage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like you said, relationships, financial ruin, the angst and anxiety, your health going bad and all this other stuff. He said, Joe, that's pretty a clear sign that God doesn't want you doing.
Yeah, that's right. You hit a point where you realize, you know, God is not helping me with this.
Right.
I think I need to back up and be doing what he's helping me with, you know.
And so I'm glad that you pretty much affirmed his point. And so, no, it's not a lack of faith. It's called wisdom and discernment.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, we're running short on time, but I want to ask you this. You told us what you would do first.
Yeah.
If you can go back to a younger Alan getting ready to start in ministry and figuring this thing out, this pay your own way out. But if you can go back to him and tell him to do something better, what would it be? What would you have them do?
I think communicate with the leadership that I was serving under. That is the number one thing, and it's a thing that you may even have to sort of force. But it's so very vital. I think the thing that you can always do better is communicate. Communicate with my wife better. In the earlier years when we were serving and some of those things were real struggles, communicating with my wife would have been better. We got really good at that this last assignment. That's why I feel that I can talk confidently about these things. But I would say communicate better. And it is hard to overstate the importance of communication. Communicate with your leaders. If you are leading, communicate with your volunteers. Communicate with your team. It's hard to overstate how important communication is, and I would have done that better, especially in earlier positions that I had with other ministers. I would have communicated much better.
Mm-hmm. And that's why when we talked about that earlier, you were emphasizing that so much.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, communicate early and communicate often with leadership. And, you know, that tells you that you've gotten a lot of wisdom from that because, yeah, you all have to go through that one time before you figure that one out.
Yeah, hopefully. So, you're right.
Yeah, we need to be talking a little bit more. Now, Alan, it's time for the infamous man up questions.
Right.
And these are five quick questions starting with the letters M-A-N-U-P. And we require just your brutal and fearless honesty. And I'm sure you'll be able to handle that. So the question is, Alan, are you ready, man?
I think I'm ready.
Okay, and we'll get started right after this short break. If you're like most men in our audience, you're committed to becoming the man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be. But the truth of the matter is, you struggle with either finding the time or knowing where to start. That's exactly why I created the Real Men Spiritual Leader Blueprint, to give you a step-by-step, easy-to-follow guide to spiritually leading your family, even if you're a new believer. Now, you can't buy the Real Men Spiritual Leader Blueprint, but you can get it for free by signing up for our free e-newsletter. By signing up, you will be notified anytime fresh content is added to my site, so you don't always have to visit my blog to stay up-to-date on the latest information. Now, to get your free copy of the Real Men Spiritual Leader Blueprint, just visit realmenconnect.com and simply enter your name and email address on the form on the page. So if you're tired of trying to figure it all out and fit it all in as the spiritual leader, provider, and protector of your family, don't miss your chance to discover how to be the man God called and created you to be. Sign up today at realmenconnect.com. Welcome back, Mighty Warriors. We're with Alan Beck, who's sharing with us today how you can pay your own way in ministry. And I'm going to turn the tables a little bit on Alan. He's been talking to us about what he's learned over the years of being in ministry and how he could do it better. But we didn't spend a lot of time, Alan, talking to you about some personal things. So I'm going to change the man up questions to make it a little bit more personal for you and not have it target on ministry, but target you personally. And so we're going to start with the first letter, which is M. Now we're going to look at you not as a ministry leader, not as an entrepreneur, but as a man. What mistake did you learn the most from as a man?
I learned that I cannot compare myself to others in terms of achievement or anything in order to gain value or determine if I'm in the will of God, because I used to think, I think it goes back to that, back when I used to think the ideal was full-time ministry. And so in much of my time, even as I was really doing well in a lot of ways, I just thought that I wasn't really doing it because I wasn't comparing myself to other men. And it wasn't until much later that I realized, hey, I've ended up in a pretty good spot here. And it's kind of like Joseph, you know, the Lord kind of put me in these different places and I couldn't see what he was doing. And I've ended up in a good spot. And the big mistake that I was making was comparing myself to others and not realizing that God was doing something already.
Now, the A, Alan, stands for attitude. And if you could change one thing about your attitude other than comparison, and we're looking at you as a husband and a father, what would it be if you could change attitude in yourself?
Now or in the past? Just
I would say now. Yeah. Let's use now.
All right. Well, I think that I would an attitude that I am always working on. And when I say I want to change it, I think I have been changing it. I want to be better at understanding the perspective of other people and not having an attitude that I know why they're doing what they're doing, when often I don't know what they're doing. I don't know why they're doing what they're doing. That's an attitude that I have been changing and want to keep on changing.
Now, Alan, the N stands for next. And you're doing a lot of things in business, obviously, and even in the ministry. What would be the next big thing you would attempt to do for God as a man if you couldn't?
I would like to, in some of our conversations, I told you that where I am in life right now is I just have a great desire to be helpful in a lot of areas. And so I think I would travel all over and I would speak about business and I would speak about leadership and I would speak about men's issues and family. And I would just try to be helpful to worship teams and church leadership teams and just take these years and put them to work for other people. That's what I would do.
You know, what I'm hearing in that is you want to be a super servant.
Yeah, that's a good phrase. I like that. Yes.
Yeah, super servant. All right. Now, Alan, the U stands for and represents understand. And when you were a younger man, what was the one thing you didn't understand about being a man, but you know
better
now? Well,
I'll tell you, I thought about this one. I've said this to people over the years. You show me a man who thinks he has no problem in an area, and I'll show you a man who's never been tested in that area. What I didn't understand was that the things that I thought I had down were just things that I was not really tested in. And later on, you get tested in those things and you realize, okay, I need to learn something here.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I can think about so many areas of my life. I think what you're just saying, when you think you've got it as a husband or as a father or as an entrepreneur, and you think, until that test comes, wait a minute, I didn't know.
Well, you know, it's kind of like almost every young parent who has a 6-month-old baby and it's their first, they pretty much know exactly everything you need to do to raise a kid, you know.
Right.
And that's just normal. It's how, you know.
Until the kid starts middle school.
That's right. Yeah, and then just wait until you have adult children. That's a different, a different world, you know. But anyway.
Now, here's the last question. The last letter is P, and it stands for problem. And you've touched on some of the things that you're working on even now with your attitude, but let's look at a personal struggle that you still have. I call it a problem, but as a mighty man of God, what do you still struggle with as a man even
today? Yeah, I think this is a thing that I just have to stay close to Jesus over, and that is anger. Probably any business owner that's here in this will know, if you have employees, it's a recipe for anger. They can make you mad, you know. employees, children, just, you know, and any area of life, there are lots of reasons that you can really deal with anger. And that's a thing over the years. It's a thing that, it's just a thing that I know I have to stay close to the Lord over, and then He will strengthen me and help me to, you know, it's, I think a problem is maybe an overstatement. It's a thing that requires my constant attention, and everybody has those things. I think we're left with them sometimes so that we will depend on the Lord and not on ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I'm thinking now, you have me already thinking, I need to bring an expert on anger management on the show. I would love to do a show on that, because you're right. If you're in business for yourself, you're going to deal with the angry demon. He's going to come at you. Now, I tell you, Alan, just from the short time that I've known you and talked to you, man, I can't even imagine you getting angry. Your personality doesn't seem to be that kind of way.
If that's true, it's because I've been working on it for 30 years.
Okay. So you tell it that it does get better with time.
You just have to stay close to the Lord. But you never, you know, there are going to be things that you can never ignore.
Well, Alan, speaking of time, what a great segue that we've come to the end of our time on the show today. And I just want to thank you, man. I want to thank you for joining us today and being so gracious with your time.
Well, thank you for having me, Joe. It's a joy to talk to you, and I think what you're doing here is just great.
Well, I love doing it because I get to meet guys like you. And today, I'm hoping it's going to be a blessing for a lot of men out there who are listening today. But it has blessed me because I'm in the trenches doing men's ministry on my own outside of a church. But I've also been in that role, too. So you've given at least, I know for me, a lot of insights and a lot of things that I think I could share with some of the guys who I know are aspiring leaders in ministry. So I appreciate that. But Alan, if they wanted to find out how they could reach out to you, if somebody has questions later on or get connected with you, because we didn't even get to the business side of what you're doing in business, which I think is fascinating how you got into that. And maybe we might bring you on for another show to talk about the business standpoint
of how you
got into business and what advice you would give us in helping us in business. But if they wanted to find out more about you or get in contact with you, what's the best way?
Well, I have just launched at the moment, it's not more than a blog, but it's going to be a resource or a sort of a repository for resources for men, business, leadership, spiritual growth, things like that. So they can go to becksound.net, like Alan Beck, becksound.net, and there's a contact form on there, and they can reach out to us.
And spell that for us, Alan.
becksound.net, becksound.net.
.net. And we'll make sure to put that in the show notes as well. That's becksound.net. And any other ways they can probably reach out. Maybe we might even add your email address in there as well, because I have that. Again, thank you so much for being on the show. And to the listeners out there, guys, thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening every week and sharing our podcast with others. And please do us a huge favor. You know, like I always ask you every week, just take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program. Guys, we're now the number one rated program for Christian men. And it's because you have been leaving reviews, you've been sharing, and you've been downloading. And we really appreciate that. But until next time, I'm Joe Martin, your man builder with RealMenConnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man God called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.